I've been looking at this as an opportunity to add value to calves in this area. The Florida in general is known for more than 800,000 calves leave the state to be backgrounded somewhere else and finish somewhere else. And especially in the northern part of Florida, but so is true for some south and central Florida, there is a lot of exceptional cattle that really could move away from the commodity, selling calves at a discount. And that's kind of in my extension program, trying to add value to calves. And I found in corn silage one of the best tools to do that, with a lot of caveats to that, like protein supplementation being the number one.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Molinix, and today I have a pleasure of talking to Nicholas DiLorenzo from the University of Florida. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Travis. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so we got some interesting things on the plate, especially talking about feeding cattle, corn silage, maybe get into some methane mitigation research that you've have going on at Florida. But for everyone's for background of who you are, can you just give a brief background of who is Nick and what do you do at Florida?
Yep, be glad to. So people call me back home, and I'll tell you a little bit what back home is. They call me Nico for short. So and here a lot of people call me Nick, and that's some of the nicest things they call me. So from then, everything gets worse. But I'm originally from Argentina. I came to the U.S. in 2000, actually part of a exchange program where I worked at the at a producer's place in Iowa, northwest Iowa. And that was my first experience here. And then part of that program, I took classes at the University of Minnesota, where I met Alfredo Di Costanzo. I got the opportunity to work at the USDA cell wall forage lab with Hans Young at the time. And that's when I started getting passionate about research. And I've always been passionate about beef cattle. I grew up with all my family in Argentina, being involved one way or another in cattle, in a cattle operation that we still own today as a family. Today, my mom and dad are running it. And so I always been passionate about that, but this opportunity to do a study abroad is mainly an opportunity to learn English and to get to experience some other things. So one thing led to another. I met Alfredo Di Costanzo in Minnesota, and he told me, "What have you ever thought about grad school?" And I had no idea what grad school looked like or what it was. So then I went back home. I finished my degree in animal science, and then I stayed in touch with Alfredo. And the next year, he hit me again and said, "Do you think any more about it?" And at the time, things in Argentina were not great economically. And it seemed like a good opportunity to do a master's and then come back to the family operation. And that was, I started in 2001, and I've been here ever since. So that, from then I went to get my master's and PhD in Minnesota. I was able to do a postdoc at Texas Tech, working with Mike Gallion. I always wanted to work with Dr. Gallion and get to see what the feedlot industry was. That was a part of my training that I needed to expand a little more. And since then, in 2010, started at the University of Florida, and I've been moving through the ranks, and now I'm a professor at UF and at the North Florida Research and Education Center, where I have a 35% extension, 65% research appointment. So basically, I enjoy a lot my extension component, and I try to, as much as possible, to integrate that with my research. And it's been probably the most rewarding thing I have. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the story of how I all my different stops between Iowa, Minnesota, the Twin Cities. I did a little bit of teaching. I had a Wisconsin River Falls for about a semester. I taught feed some feeding there as a lecturer, and then went back to finish my degree. And yeah, been 15 years in the Panhandle of Florida.
Oh, that's great. I think, you know, having an extension component is very important from the research standpoint of understanding our needs of where the research should be going. That so many people, I think, miss out of chasing, you know, grants, chasing these ideas that at the end of the day does not help who we serve. And I think that extension component is great for developing, you know, where should I be taking my research?
Absolutely. And it's I have a file full of ideas that are non-fundable, but a lot of fun to do. So someday I'll try to get through them.
That's a totally different topic, but a very important topic that, you know, a lot of what the producers need is so unfundable, but we still have to find ways to do them, to provide them the answers. But
Absolutely.
One of your research areas is feeding corn silage and you know, backgrounding animals on corn silage. So in Florida, I know you talked about, you know, your time in Minnesota, Iowa, big corn silage, big corn areas. A lot of corn silage has been fed in the Midwest, but some of these areas outside of those corn silage is not being fed much. And so is it for your producers in some of these areas, is it a viable feedstuff to plant, harvest, start feeding cattle, et cetera?
Absolutely. I think, well, like you say, I've been exposed when I was in Iowa. Actually, one of my first jobs when I was working at this family operation in Northwest Iowa was to do corn silage. We went with a two-row chopper, and I was just running the truck and then packing it. I was exposed to that earlier back in Argentina during my undergrad, but never to the degree that I did in Iowa. I never seen the yields. I still haven't seen the yield that I've seen in Iowa years back. But it is, to me by far, is the cheapest feed for, once you put everything in, including all the rising costs of fertilizer and everything, still the cheapest feed for the quality that we have. And what I saw when I moved here in 2010, we did not use in this research station, we did not use silage at all, but also in the area was not very popular. And I always was curious about that. This is the big peanut and cotton area with a lot of winter grazing and a lot of winter annuals that are grazed over until we plant again cotton or peanut. But at some point in the rotation, there's few people that were doing corn with very decent yield. The soils, and I'm talking specifically maybe in the Panhandle of Florida, where we do have some nice agricultural soils. It's hard to define a line where this thing doesn't work. But if I have to, it'd probably be across I-4 and from then south. I've just seen that it's very hard to keep up with the yields and the competitions you get from any of the other annuals here. Just to give you an idea, we typically plant corn around March 15, and we're able to harvest that for silage usually the first week of July, which that gives us still plenty of time, which is what we've been doing for a couple of years here at the station, to turn around and plant sorghum, which we can talk about that later, but then get a second harvest. Still in time, we usually plant sorghum mid to late July, so that by early November, early to mid-November, we can harvest that and then have those two crops and then still in time to plant oats or rye or triticale, which have been very popular here. So I've been looking at this as an opportunity to add value to calves in this area. Florida in general is known for more than 800,000 calves leave the state to be backgrounded somewhere else and finished somewhere else. And especially in the northern part of Florida, but so is true for some south and central Florida, there is a lot of exceptional cattle that really could be move away from the commodity, selling calves at a discount. And that's kind of in my extension program, trying to add value to calves And I found in corn silage one of the best tools to do that, with a lot of caveats to that, like protein supplementation being the number one. I still think that it's just one of the greatest the feeds that we have, and we can grow it here. Now, we do need to irrigate in North Florida, otherwise it gets really tough to get a decent crop of corn. No matter what time of the year we do it, it's always dry in the summertime here, or it's too hot, basically. We do get a lot of rain in the summertime, but our soils have a pretty heavy sand component, so they don't retain a lot of water. It gets worse as we go south, but even up here in the Panhandle, we still have some days that really we need to be irrigating quite often. But with all of that, we get yields that in the neighborhood of 24 to 26 tons per acre of green chop, which is pretty comparable with some of the yields that you might find in some other non-traditional corn areas. It's hard to compare with Iowa or Nebraska yields, but it's something that I think I would love for producers to adopt it more, and it's slowly trying to make a little bit of progress on that.
So what are the challenges for producers to adopt it? What's the pushback of?
Great question. When I put everything together, and I did recently at an extension meeting, we're still feeding a crop that is $48 to $52 per ton on an as-fed basis with a 35% dry matter. So it's still pretty comparable. But the problem is that we may be paying as much as, it may cost us as much as $700 an acre to produce that crop. So it's just a big investment, number one. So producers that are not familiar with making a big investment at the beginning of a crop are a little bit more cautious about it. Now, the farmers in the area that plant cotton and peanuts, they're quite used to all of that. They know the cost of fertilizer. They know the investment it takes to do a good crop. And that's one of the biggest hurdles. The next one by far is who is going to chop it and pack it, put it on the back. We have very few people doing that in the area. And that's been, we found it early on that that's been one of our greatest bottlenecks. Now, after a couple of years, now we got to the point where we're seeing now more players coming into that field, but just every time I talk to them, the initial investment in buying the equipment is just astronomical. So I commend them from taking that risk, and I really wish we had more people, especially young people that want to get into this business, maybe providing that service. I think it's something that it could work for even the small producer, small and medium sized producer, that they may have maybe 200 acres in a rotation. In fact, back home, I still have a lot of friends and neighbors and relatives in Argentina that they may just do silage and may have 50 to 100 head, and they'll background cattle and just sell it and start all over again. And that's kind of what I've been trying to push here.
You talked on adding value, and you know, for that small producer, that there can be tremendous amount of value from how they're going to market these animals, and adding some higher nutrient value, you know, feedstuffs that you can maybe get double or triple the crop. And you know, talking about backgrounding animals, you know, if you take that step further of some of these direct marketing situations, that adds a lot of value for a smaller producer. Is it seems like that would be a great opportunity for your smaller producers that, you know, that may not be getting the best price for the calves because they're smelling small lots, but this is a great way for adding a lot of value and backgrounding and finish those steers off of a corn silage based diet.
Absolutely. And that's that. You hit on one of the next bigger issue is just to sell in uniform lot, figure out strategic alliances with people. There's some producers that are already doing that. It's amazing how some of the most progressive producers, so especially in Central and South Florida, actually we have a few here in the Panhandle too, that they already been selling calves to Iowa. There's a lot of calves. Actually, last week I was at Colorado at one of the largest yards there, from Five River, they have Florida cattle there. I've been in Nebraska 2 years ago, and there was some Wagyu cattle being fed at a feedlot there. So there's, I think there are there's some of that going on, but I think also this background may provide additional strategy to be able to avoid selling calves, basically weaning and selling it off the track. That's one of the most common practices here, especially in South Florida, large ranches. They'll wean calves pretty much on diesel and then just ship them out to the some to the panhandle, which is why I started this idea of backgrounding. And like I say, it's gaining some traction. Now with the market the way it is, it's hard to even convince anybody to background calves when calves are what they are right now. But even then, there's people that see the value on that extra pound. And like I always tell, feed cost to gain is everything. So the feed producers, they calculate that if they're able to do corn or sorghum silage, because both of them work pretty good, add a little bit of protein on the side. It's just amazing what returns on the investment can be made on that.
Yeah, so you touched on sorghum silage. Do you see a lot of your producers using these for either one, corn silage or sorghum silages, in heifer development rations outside of just backgrounding steers? Are they using it for some of their development, even feeding some lactating cows, et cetera?
Absolutely. And that really, we've done one of the studies we've done with one of my students towards some of the end of his master's project and then moving into PhD was to basically compare corn and sorghum silage, something that's been done probably in the past. And then we added a treatment with just corn silage, no protein added at all. And then we balanced those two for protein. So long story short, I really, really like sorghum silage for backgrounding heifers. I think it makes it a great feed. We basically, with a 10% cottonseed meal and 90% sorghum silage, we were right at 2 pounds a day on 6 to 7 weighing heifers that were very steady. They developed at a great pace, and they turned out to be great first calf heifers. Even they maintained some condition later. When we did it with corn, it still worked. Actually, it worked better. We got 3 pounds a day of gain on those for the same 10% cottonseed meal. But it almost got to be too much, to the point that some of the heifer, they had a little bit too much condition by the time of the beginning of the season. So, yeah, what I always recommend is to manage the inventory and maybe try to put the corn where we have to push some of those steers that we're going to sell. But for heifers, definitely that sorghum silage. Now, sorghum silage does not really get the yield here. At least we don't get the yields that we get with corn. And certainly does not feed the same way as corn. It does have that much lesser of a performance. But in spite of that, it has a room. For instance, for producers that have dry land, they have no way to get irrigation, I would never recommend planting corn in this area. It's still very risky. Chances of having a great crop are very small. So people that plant in March or more April, just to be away from some of the frost that we may have, a late frost, April or even in May, planted sorghum, we have yields close to 20 tons per acre, 19 to 20 tons per acre, which are not bad. It's not the same quality as corn, but for heifer development, like you say, certainly has a huge opportunity. And as far as feeding cows, both what we do with cows is we limit feed corn, or we mix it with triticale silage, for instance. That makes a perfect combination that we found too for cows that have gut capacity to consume some of those silages. It's been a really great resource as well. We've been wintering cows with silage here in North Florida, and that's something also some other producers are adopting, because mostly cow-calf producers in this area.
Yeah, I think, you know, with corn silage, especially in heifer development, it's very easy to get them way too fat. And so that's the downside, is it's so high quality that if you don't have something to decrease that quality or limit feed it, then, you know, your rate of gains are going to be too high and you're going to have too fat of heifers going into the breeding season. So that can be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if have you experienced that the same in your area, but that's one of the biggest issues that people tend to over, especially the replacement heifers. Never to the point that it's been an issue. In the past we try different strategies and we had some fat heifers that at the end they still got pregnant and never seen some of the issues that I hear or read about overconditioning heifers. They seem to have an ability to lose all that in that fertilization anyways.
So I know you've done some research on some self-feeding corn silage. And when I was in Brazil this last September, I saw a study that they were doing the same thing. So it's an interesting concept of, you know, you got an ag bag pushed up to some kind of a creek feeding fence gate. Is that how you do it too?
Yep, absolutely. Either that or even the simplest version we've done here is some just hot wire on the top and on the bottom. And we just lie, we may put the bag against a fence, and then we'll just create another fence on the side to avoid cattle just trampling over the bag. And we'll just lie like a gate handle that we'll just slide it over. There, it's critical not to touch the feed tube. We have to have someone every day making sure that you sort of condition that wall. And this works great for corn and sorghum silage. Not as good as some of the other cereal like rye or triticale, because they don't form like a face, like that silage base as good as corn, as well packed corn and sorghum silage. But it was great. As far as cutting labor, you mentioned some of the challenges to adoption, and I should have said this too. The number one challenge to adoption is labor. Like people tell me, when I started showing them at the station what we've been doing with cows, so, well, that's easy for you. You guys have a couple feed wagons. You can mix it. So, and it is true. It is a challenge to feed it out every day. So we've been playing with this concept. We had a couple of videos that I made for in different websites and outlets, and it really works. The one thing you can mess it up pretty quickly is rain and muddy areas. So we learned a few tricks for that too, trying to make it, put it on a hill or somewhere where cattle pretty much have to walk up to it if possible. Figured out ways to avoid them walking through all the mud that they already been. So maybe we'll just open several gates on the side so cattle can enter from the side instead of having to walk a long way through the same place as the bag progresses, basically. So allow them to enter to the creep feeding areas close to the bag as possible. There's just little tricks. I've seen people even that have dedicated area where they will put like a bedrock and they'll try to get cattle eating on that. There's creative ways to do it, but certainly is one of the things that prevents people from using it. And then this self-feeding approach has been great for us. The only one caveat that I always tell producers with that is the protein. We still have to supplement, especially if you're growing cattle. Mature cows, sometimes we can get by with very little.
Yeah. So if you compare daily feeding corn silage to self-feeding in your scenarios, how does that play out?
That's interesting.
In performance-wise?
Yeah, we never done it. We have a lot of, we had the capacity to do that. We've been discussing that. I would suspect, when I say the capacity, we have some like grow safe or Vitelli type equipment where we could free choice silage and see if we are in a way limiting. We still struggle with how to measure intake on the bag. We kind of go by linear feet of how many linear feet we advance. We try to advance about one per day. And we learned that one feet of on our 12 foot bag that we do, it's almost close to between 1.5 to 2 tons of well packed corn silage. So it's number one, we got to have a lot of cattle to be able to move into fresh material every day. And as far as the comparison, I think we probably waste a little bit more, or maybe quite a bit more, with the bag. It's still not a labor free, is what I tell everybody. Like I pretend you're like feeding like hay rolls during the winter. You have to go open gates, cut the wire. It's the same every day. You just go there and touch that. Make sure, we always recommend to have a pitchfork nearby to be able to remove material that it sits on the hot fence. And then just a pocket knife, cut a foot a day and slide the creeping gates or the and so it does take a little bit of maintenance. But the few people that have experimented that here in the northern part, even some of our people here at the station, they would prefer that than the hassle of feeding hay bale every day, opening gates, jumping in and out of the tractor. Not to mention the condition. That's not even without. That's only labor. If I have a chance to do that or hay, I'll pick corn silage anytime.
So it's definitely an interesting option for a lot of producers that want to cut or have to cut some of their labor costs and try to save some labor.
Yeah, and I saw the some of the latest trends on the, I know it's the average herd size in the U.S. It keeps shrinking, it seems like. So we, in this area, we're not the exception. We still have a lot of hobby farmers, people that do produce great quality beef and calf, but they may only have 50 head.
Yeah, for that smaller producer, I think this could be a great option of getting a high quality feed to them over winter during a non growing season, or even backgrounding animals on pastures.
Absolutely, I wish somebody invents the next thing. Somebody needs to work on is some self limiting high protein something, or the device like a trip hopper or something that can deliver a certain amount per day. I discussed this with my producers in the area. That would be a game changer. If we can figure out a way to deliver protein, even every other day, doesn't have to be every day, but in a way that it's safe and labor, it'd be great.
Well, what's the possibility of bagging that corn silage with, cotton seed meal as your protein source?
That's an excellent idea. You probably took my idea. I've been thinking about that. I would love that. Actually, I hope somebody does it and maybe learn from that. I tell you, anecdotally, I have one producer back in Argentina that I visit that they were putting cottonseed meal in the bottom of, like, every trip that they would make on the track, the silage track, they'll put cottonseed meal in the bottom. They'll fill it up with silage and then another load with a skid loader of cottonseed meal. Very hard to measure. I mean, it's very uneven. And then by the time that they dump it into the bag, with all that movement, they can hope and pray that it gets evenly distributed, which it doesn't. But that's the closest I've seen to what you're saying. I think, to me, it really shouldn't be that complicated to figure out a device the same way we do with inoculant. On top of a bagger that can trickle cottonseed meal, soybean meal, distillers, actually. I would love to try distillers. Dry distillers into the bag and have a complete feed. That's, I think you should do it and let me know how it goes.
We'll work on that. Well, Nick, to wrap us up, do you have anything you want to touch on?
No, not really. I think it's been a wonderful. I get very passionate and long-winded in my answers, so I apologize for that.
It's time for our famous three.
A high-functioning rumen drives herd performance, gut health, and profitability. Levucel SC by Lelemon Animal Nutrition is the only naturally occurring rumen-specific active dry yeast probiotic designed to optimize rumen function, boost fiber digestion, and help you get more out of your native rangeland or pasture. No matter how you supplement your herd, include Levucel SC to help your cows grow bigger calves. Discover the right formulation for your herd at ChooseLevucelSC.com.
No problem at all. It's good stuff. And so to wrap us up, we've got one question for you. And so what sets apart, in your opinion, a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
That's a tough question, but a really good one that I, in my opinion, if I reflect back on, and I wouldn't consider myself as successful, but I work around a lot of very successful guys. The ability to stay humble, even if you're doing great thing, I think that's That's number one. In my profession, particularly with extension, I learned the ability to listen and to listen carefully, especially in the, when it's just tempting to speak, the ability to listen to people that made mistakes in the past and they're willing to share, and the ability to step out of the comfort zone sometimes to do things like this silage that doesn't seem like anything too crazy, but here, the time that we started, it kind of was. Sometimes you have to step out of the comfort zone. So those two things, the ability to listen and try to do things a little different, I think probably are two things that I would set people apart. But I'll let you know whenever if I ever get there. I keep trying, but yeah.
No, I think that's a great response, that we've got to stay out of our comfort zones. It's that really limits our ability to move forward when we're always comfortable.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks for jumping on the podcast. Did a lot of great things for your beef producers in Florida and elsewhere.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for your time, and it's been a pleasure.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.